That's why I've come from far away, to take away the blues. And I've come to say, I wanna be more than just somebody. I wanna be more than just a friend. I wanna be more than someone special, 'cause special friends sometimes they won't understand. Good morning, good morning, good morning on this beautiful summer morning here in Connecticut. And I do pray that wherever you are joining us from on this God bless given morning, or maybe for some of my listeners, it's night where you are. I pray that you will take the time to really enjoy this day and embrace. I'm hearing some disturbances. I think it's coming from my guest who is waiting.
Yes. Okay. My apologies. It's 7 o'clock in the morning here.
Okay. I just pray that wherever you are, that you are taking time to enjoy this day that is still another blessing to be alive, to witness, and to embrace. I am the queen of the empowered soul, and I see it as a privilege each time I get an opportunity to be on the airwaves to greet.
Yes.
To greet you, hold on there. I just have to ask my guests to try and settle down. There's a lot of disturbances that is coming in, and I just want to do a bit of housekeeping, and then I will I'll bring you on. So I apologize to the listeners for all of what's going on there. I'm not sure what it is, but I pray that we'll get that subdued in a moment. Okay, so I am excited about the episode, the segments for today. I have two amazing guests. Our first guest is waiting there in the green room, and we're going to bring her on momentarily. I know her name is nothing new to Blog Talk. She is Loretta N. Green Williams, and she too have a Blog Talk radio show, and you're going to be hearing a lot from her in this first segment. And then our second segment, I will be joined by none other than the melodious Cherie Victorian. And Cherie and I met at a conference some years ago, and we build a relationship, and she's doing some phenomenal things in music. So this morning, I think we can very well label this morning as the girls hang out. Today, the girls are going to be hanging out. And in the third and fourth segment of the show, I'm going to be sharing with you from the Success magazine. There's some phenomenal stories in here. Magic Johnson is on the cover and all of that good stuff. So that's what we will spend the third and fourth segment of this show on. I want to remind you to visit the visionweekend.com conference site and grab your registration. The date for the conference is September the 2nd through the 4th, and it will take place here in the exquisite New England town of Southbury, nested right there in, as I said, in the New England town of Southbury at the Heritage Hotel Golf and Spa. So for those of you who are golfers and you want to play on one of the country's most luxurious courts, you want to be at that conference, and then you can, after the conference, you can spend time in the spa and also on the golf course. Now, without any further delay, I want to bring my guest on, but I am not sure what it is that is causing the disturbance, Loretta, but it's coming in loud and clear, so I'm not sure.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what it is. I heard a lot of stuff going on, so if you can just try and make that go away.
Okay.
Technology has a mind of its own, and I'm not sure what it is that's going on, but it's very sensitive, and it's coming through loud and clear. So, welcome, and thank you. Thank you so much for waking up so early, because you're on the West Coast. And
yes.
Although it is sunny here in Connecticut, I know it's the wee hours out there in California. So welcome, my sister, to the new day.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I'm so excited about being on your show. As a matter of fact, this is the first show I've been on.
Oh, well, I love making histories. I love making
Yes.
So that's another first for me, too, to have you on. I had a gentleman a couple months ago from Israel, and I was so excited. When I ended up meeting him in person, he said to me, oh, your show was the first one that I'm on. So I said, well, and I hope I'll have many more Israeli on the show. So it was great to hear that. You are such an amazing woman doing some phenomenal things, and there are so many rich parts of who you are and the journey that you have traveled, and as a matter of fact, still traveling. So as
yes.
I look over all that information about you, I decided that this morning we are going to be speaking about multiculturalism and how it impacts entrepreneurship. Because
okay.
I know like myself, you have a global outlook on what entrepreneurship is all about. I'm so excited
yes.
about what the internet
yes.
has afforded us to do. And
yes.
I think more entrepreneurs and small business owners need to understand that in order to leverage what is available to us. So before any delay, any further delay, would you take a little time to just introduce yourself to the listeners and tell them how Loretta's journey began?
Well, I was actually born in Harlem Hospital. My mother is of Cuban lineage. She was from Santiago de Cuba. And my father's family is from Port Royal area of Jamaica. And so that is where my journey of multiculturalism began, because we are very comfortable looking at life from a global perspective. As a child coming up on the East Coast, I found it very difficult that Americans of African diaspora didn't have a true identity. So they went from Negro to Black to Afro-American to African-American. I was always told that I am African and I'm Jamaican. And that's who I was. And that permeated a theoretical construct that I developed that is called social spiritualism. That between my father's relationship to action in the community and reading Ida B. Wells Burnett. And what that means is that it is always God, family, community, everything that you do. And based on that is why you do what you do because you're obligated by God to take care of others, and you are obligated to take care of your family, and you are obligated to take care of your community. And you do that in that perspective. And so when developing those frameworks, it allowed me to take it to a level where I could do it from a business perspective. And here I am today doing research and development for small businesses to enhance their relationship to community because of a lack of understanding of how to embrace multiple communities and multiple cultures. An example is right now I am considered director of marketing for Caribbean Media Network. And while we are an organization that is located in the United States, we do a lot of work in the, not only the Caribbean, but in Europe as well. And so that's the exciting thing about that, that we have a framework that we can draw from that allows people to understand that first, we have an obligation to our higher being, we have an obligation to our family, we have an obligation to our community. And you just do. As a human being, you do. So your community becomes global. Your family becomes global because your God is global.
Okay, Loretta. Do you have windows open or something? Because there's a lot of noise that is coming in that is overpowering our conversation. And I'm not sure what kind of microphone you're using, but on there, there's supposed to be a gauge that shuts the noise out. There's a lot of disturbance. I don't know. I'm hearing somebody talking in the background. I'm hearing a lot of stuff.
Okay. Let me see if I can get this cut off.
So I don't know if you have windows open that is coming from outside, but there's a lot, like somebody on a CB radio, or it's just a lot of disturbance.
Okay, let me see if I can get that cut down. Yeah. So,
just hold on a minute, because all I needed for you to do was to introduce. Loretta, I'm hearing.
Yes.
I'm still hearing a man's voice.
Okay, let me see if I can block that off.
Okay, listeners, you know, technology has a mind of its own, and they are so good in what they manufacture.
Yeah, I'm trying to get that off. My sincere apologies.
Okay, so I am attempting to get into a trouble-free conversation or interruption-free conversation with Mrs. Loretta Green-Williams, Green Williams, and I'm not sure what is going on, but there's a lot. Can you probably change rooms or something?
Yes, I'll attempt to do that now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's just too... It's really, really, really disturbing. Disturbing.
Okay,
here.
My apologies.
And okay, so we are waiting for this conversation to continue.
Is that better?
I don't know. I'm still hearing somebody in the background. So I just I just want to pick up on something you mentioned when I asked you to introduce yourself, and was the fact that your parents were from two different countries, and you were brought up to know that you were Cuban, you were African American, and you were Jamaican.
Yes.
Loretta, it's still coming through loud and clear.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Can you go in another room? Is there another
room?
Yes,
I'm attempting.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm in
Because I'm not sure. Are you on a cell phone? I'm not sure what it is.
Yes, unfortunately. I am.
So is that what is picking up the disturbance?
I think it is, yeah. I think it's, yes, unfortunately, yes.
Do you have a landline now?
Actually, I'm on my way to San Francisco.
So you are driving?
Yes.
Okay, so that I'm not sure this is a good thing, because it's going to be a lot of disturbance. I'm not hearing. So I hope. Are you there?
I am.
Can you not pull over and go to a place? Well, I'm not hearing that anymore. So let's hope that this conversation will be able to continue, because we just lost a lot of valuable time trying to sort that out. I was saying, I was born and raised in Jamaica, and in Jamaica we have a lot of every culture and ethnicity, and I grew up with just knowing that we are all Jamaicans. Yet when I arrived in this amazing country, I came to realize that there were a lot of labels that was being attached to me. And it was like a rude awakening.
Yes. That was confusing for me. Yes.
Loretta, this is just not working out.
Okay, so let me go to another location.
Yeah,
and I'll call you. I'll call in later. All right.
How much later? Because the other guest is on that thing. This is just a lot of disturbance. I cannot hear you. Oh, okay. I apologize, listeners, for that. There's a lot of disturbance on the call, and a lot of valuable time being wasted trying to talk over that that situation there. So if my other guest is listening, and I just pray, Sherry, that you are on a landline that will not give us any disturbance. If you are listening, Sherry, you go ahead and call in now. And I want to remind you that you can now tune into EaglesVisionMediaGroup.com, and you can hear some of the shows that are over there. You can listen to them 24 hours a day. So for you people who are working a night job, you can have the show there with you 24 hours a day by checking out EaglesVisionMediaGroup.com. So again, it's EaglesVisionMediaGroup.com. So check it out and tell us what you think about that. And the radio station is EVMGRadio.com. Okay, so I'm waiting to hear Loretta call back in. I do apologize for that. And waiting to see her call back in. So in the meantime, while I wait for her, I received my issue of the Success magazine. This is the August 2010 issue. And Magic Johnson is on the cover, and Magic is speaking about the keys to successful transition. And, you know, I read it, and Magic said something that just resonated with me. Our guest has called back in. Well, hello.
Hi, Yes, okay. Here I am. I moved inside.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
I said I'm moving inside now. San Francisco Bay Area is so huge that generally you can do anything. So here I am.
Okay, all right, great. So I was mentioning before you had to hang up. It's much better now. I'm not hearing any disturbance, so that's good. The people will be able to hear us over. Now I have to learn to edit. I don't know how to edit, so I have to learn to edit to cut out all of what took place before. So
yeah.
have the desire, we learn. So I guess I that's something that I need to learn to do. And I was saying, I had no idea I was a black woman until I came to America. And then I realized that there were a lot of labels that are being placed on you and on each person. And not only us as women, but as men too, especially those who are from different countries. And
yes.
As entrepreneurs, we have to know and understand how to use multiculturalism to our advantage.
Yes.
So as an entrepreneur, Loretta, and also the story you shared about how you grew up, knowing that your heritage came from two different countries. You were being raised in another country who wasn't sure whether they were African Americans, or Negroes. How has that impact or influence, if you may, the way you do business?
First of all, you have to know who you are, and you have to know whose you are. You know who you are and whose you are, you can go forward with business, because you'll do it with confidence and with a defined relationship in that confidence. Mm-hmm. So the aspects of having multiple ethnicities and nationalities allows one to base their direction mm-hmm. with comfort mm-hmm. and credibility. And I think that is the greatest challenge that I've had in this country, is that I knew who I was, I know whose I was, and based on that, I could go forward. Multiculturalism is just a level of acceptance of multiple cultures within a framework that allows all voices to be heard. That means that no matter what your ethnicity is or your nationality, it is not marginalized by the dominant when it's going forth to doing work, whatever work or process that is. And so it's a way of allowing someone to find their relationship within that woven component of dominance that previously did not allow you to have an identity or relationship to them. So my training in multiculturalism not only comes from the perspective of being a person of multicultural ethnicities, but also I have a graduate study certificate in intercultural communication from the University of Pacific, and also a certification in ethnic studies from the University of San Francisco. And with the doctoral training in social and cultural anthropology, it's allowed me to push forward those venues of communications. And I'm sure you've noticed on my blog that I actually blog about multiculturalism and marketing.
So in other words, because you had a true appreciation for multiculturalism, not only did you involve yourself totally in it, you went and you got additional education which could help you to impart this knowledge to other people so that they too could learn and embrace it?
Yes.
Now, what?
That's correct.
I know that you have gone overseas, you have gone to Nigeria, you have gone to other places. How would you say multiculturalism is embraced in those countries when you come around the areas of entrepreneur. That is different from the way that we embrace it here in the U.S.
Well, there's a couple of reasons, couple of components I want to speak in the reasons, the importance and the impact of multiculturalism when you're actually dealing from an international perspective. Number one, you have to understand the culture you're going in. You have to understand the culture and the fact of its multi-relationship, its layered relationship because of who that country is. An example is Jamaica, for example. We have various cultures that help to create the culture that we call the Jamaican culture. Well, without understanding those multiple layers and respecting those layers, you're not able to deconstruct that and understand how to address different aspects of business. You have to know your market. In order to know your market, you have to know its history.
Hold on a minute.
You have to know it.
Hold on a minute. Good morning, caller. You're on the air. Do you have a question or is this my second guest?
Second guest.
Okay, just hold on there. We encountered some slight technical difficulties in the beginning, so we're a couple minutes behind. I'll bring you on in a moment, okay?
Okay, fine.
All right, so just hang with us. Yes, you brought up, Loretta, you brought up about Jamaican culture, which is something that I understand and knew very well. And even as a child growing up in Jamaica, the one thing I noticed was that we had the Chinese people and they had the grocery stores and they had the bakery. Then we had the people that we call the Syrians and they sold the pots and pans and they had what we call the haberdashery. Then we had the Cummins, who look as if they were Caucasian men, and they sold furniture. And the one thing you know was that we were all interdependent on each other. And even the Chinese, when I would go to the market and my parents weren't there, the Chinese man knew who I was by name, and was able to ask me about my parents. Why weren't they there? Because we understood what it was all about and how important each of the relationships are to each other. So it was not a competition, but it was a building up of each person. The farmer knows that they have to get their seeds and things, and they know exactly where to go. Although they did not have credit cards, but they were able to get their seeds and whatever else they need. We are getting that interference again.
That's right.
They were able to get all of what they need. And they would pay when they harvest the crop and sold that. So credit was still extended to them out of trust. But everybody knows everybody there.
That's right. And everybody worked together in order for life sustainability. See, there was a level of respect and understanding of each other's cultures that allowed the blending to happen. That's the essence of what multiculturalism is. So it's just given a name, but it's something that you and I grew up understanding all along.
We're getting... Loretta, I think maybe it is the cell phone. Next time you call, please call on a landline because it's really irritating. It's really.
Okay. Well, I will let you go. Thank you very much.
Hold on.
Okay.
How, for people who are not yet embracing multiculturalism, what would be the first step for them? If you can design maybe a five-step process, what would that look like?
The first step is understand yourself and be confident with who you are. Because if you're comfortable with who you are, you're not, the rest of the community does not inhibit you or intimidate you.
Mm-hmm.
Fear comes from lack of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have knowledge. The second thing you need to do is create a plan of how to implement your relationship within that new community that you wish to go.
Mm-hmm.
The third thing is understand the community by going in the community, asking the elders, getting to know that community. The fourth thing you need to do is implement your action plan through respect of the elders. And the fifth thing to do is stay in prayer.
Powerful. Powerful. Would you tell the listeners when your show is on and how they can catch it?
Sure. Sumatra Black Talk Radio is on Friday evenings at 7 o'clock p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So we're here in the San Francisco Bay Area, so it's 7 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. And you can always go to my blog talk information page, which is www.sumatrablogtalkradio.info.
Mm-hmm. All right, all right. Well, thank you so much. I wish
thank you.
I wish we had a disturbance-free conversation, but I
yes,
pray...
Yes, my apologies for that.
I pray that the next time we can really have that so people can get in to the richness of what you're saying. I just pray that they'll be able to harness really what this conversation was about. Have a blessed day, my
yes.
sister, and I look forward
you
to
too.
Speaking with you very soon.
Yes, yes. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
You're very welcome. Bye-bye. Miss Sherry.
Hey, how are you, my friend Daphne?
I am wonderful, and how are you?
Absolutely fabulous.
Good. Are you calling from a landline?
No, I'm calling from a cell, but I don't think I'm going to have the problems that
okay,
that you did
were you able to hear what the first guest was saying?
Oh, yeah, I did. I heard it.
Okay, so I hope that speakers, because I was getting a lot of disturbance because, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, I heard that in there, but my phone was clear.
Okay, I'm just hoping
yeah.
because it's
yeah, I talk all over. Listen, you know what? On this phone, I've talked all over the world. I haven't had any problems.
Oh, well, I'm thankful for that. Well, welcome to the A New Day show. I am excited to have you on and to learn about some of the things that you are doing. But
yeah.
before we get into that, I want to welcome guest 352 to the show. I don't know whether you are a first-time listener. And if you are, I want to encourage you to go to the radio site and to sign up as a member to be my friend on the show. And you will be informed each time about the guests that I'm having on, and you can write a comment too and let me know what the show has done for you. So, Sherry, why don't you take a minute to introduce yourself? I don't want you to talk about your career. I don't want you to do any of that. I just want for you, please, to introduce yourself to the listeners. And let them know who you are and how your journey in this world began.
Wow. Okay, well, that's the first time I think I've been asked that question.
Mm.
But certainly, I grew up in a little town called Phoenix, Illinois. And early influences were my family, of course. My grandfather was a Baptist preacher. He was a pastor. So I grew up in a religious setting. The background was always devoted toward thinking of good things and doing good things and being a nice girl and all of that. And then the schools that I went to, namely, I participated in a lot of sports. I did a lot of coral things. So it was just a real colorful kind of life, I think, growing up a little girl. And everything was just pretty nice, you know. Later on in my life, I discovered that a lot of people didn't have their parents, both parents. They didn't have grandparents, and they didn't have great-grandparents. And I thought because that was part of my life, it was just normal. So I figured that I didn't talk about it, but I thought everybody had the same thing that I did. But everybody didn't. So it's sort of like I grew up with a very wholesome kind of a background life, and it was just a nice life. And then I grew up, left home, and I moved to California for a little while, and that was really interesting. And I got married and had a child. And so then after that, moved back to the Midwest. And here I am now talking to you, you know.
I want to ask.
I've done a lot of things, tried a lot of things in sales, you know.
You
just search around to find where you're going to fit in.
Yeah, we will get to that point. But you said something that was very interesting. You said you grew up with a colorful life. Would you like to expand on that a little bit? So the listeners can understand what that really means to you?
Oh, yeah. To me, it means that I had my, I went to church, went to school. It was like right in school. I ran track. I did synchronized swimming. I did gymnastics. And it was all of these different people that we met. Just in that gathering, you know, one of the things that I learned was it's like when babies are born, there is a gathering of people around them from the time that you're a little bitty child. The first group of people that you meet are those people that are in your family, and then the next group of people that you meet are your teachers. And other people in your community, and they have different aspects of different things that you see. Like in the little town that I grew up in, everybody knew the different churches, the different ministers at every church in the town. And then you knew the people from school who went to that church. They went to this place, and they went to that place. Then you knew in the town, you knew the town drunks, you knew the people that didn't live like quite the same way that you did, but it was colorful. And then I remember there was this one man that lived down the street, and all the children, because he was so tall, and he wore these overalls, and he had this very deep voice. And we would just make up all kinds of stories.
So, Sherry, as I listen to you describe colorful life, it did not only include the activities that you participated in. It include different people at different stages of your life. Because
absolutely.
I specifically ask that question because colorful to everyone is something entirely different. And it was really enlightening and enriching to listen to your breakdown of colorful. And I think this is something valuable that you are telling us this morning, because I'm not sure how much of the conversation you heard of the previous guest. We were talking about multiculturalism and the impact on entrepreneurship. And here you are coming as an entrepreneur or a small business person.
Yeah.
Here you are now speaking about a colorful life that you had as a child growing up. And as you look back over that colorful life at the humble beginning, how would you say that impacts who you are today?
Oh, very much so. Very much so. I think what happens is it molds your thinking, your attitude, life, your expectations of people. It affects your heart, your feelings. It's like, when people respond, if they respond negatively and you just don't expect that, it's like, well, why aren't they kind? Why aren't they considerate? It's like a lot of the young people, to me, some of the things that you see where the young people, a lot of the rap artists, they are centered, they're focused namely on the sexual dynamic, the money dynamic, and there's they get a big thing out of not caring, not being compassionate. And in my growing up, we were very compassionate. We were taught to be kind and considerate, respectful mm-hmm. of every human being. And mm-hmm. so when you see that children are being raised to have no feeling, no concern, and no care mm-hmm. for another human being, mm-hmm. It saddens you.
But, Sherry, don't you think, though, we are all an example of our experiences? The life we live is based on our experiences. So
it's not only experiences, Daphne. It's experience, but it's training. It's the training that you receive at home. It's like your mothers and your fathers. And a lot of these children are growing up without both parents at home. And mm-hmm. even though it's like my father really didn't have a lot to say, he was gone, he was working, he mm-hmm. came home, my mother made sure that perfect example of respect within the family was mm-hmm. My father was a steel worker.
Mm-hmm.
And there were eight children. There were 10 of us at home, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so when it came time for dinner, mm-hmm. my dad was not going to be there. My mother would fix the plate, put it in the oven for him, and mm-hmm. everybody knew, even if you came home later than dinner, because there was a lot of us, so if you came home from dinner, there's a full plate in the oven, you don't mm-hmm. touch that, because mm-hmm. that is your father's.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
In today's world, let's look back. Do you think you could be a teenager, not looking on the age you are right now, look on yourself as a teenager. Do you think this would be a comfortable world for you to be a teenager in?
Wow. Oh, Daphne, what a question. All right, let me put it to you like this. With all of the, if I had the same family makeup.
What do you, hold on. What do you mean by that? Because it's a straightforward question. I don't want you to go back to the family that you, I want you to be a teenager right now.
Woo.
You know, because...
Okay. All right, if I was a teenager right now, would I have my dad at home?
I'm sorry, I didn't get you. Let's move along. I'm going to take it to mean that this is a challenging question for you to answer. And I'm going to just say right now, it is good for us to say all that we say about when we were growing up and all of that. But then was then and now was now.
Yeah.
And it is challenging. I tell
it
you.
Is.
I raise my hat. I raise my hat to the teenagers now in today's world.
Yeah.
I raise my hat. And yes, there are not a lot of families that mom is home and dad is home. And
right.
they are trying to do their best. They are trying...
Right.
Keep a roof over their head, food in the refrigerator, send the children to school and all of that, they are juggling a million balls, and they are doing the best they know how to. And I tell you, let me just finish this, please. I think that parents are doing their best at home, but when the kids go out on the street with the peer pressure and everything, not all of them is strong enough to stand that. And this is where you and I and other community leaders come in, where we can support them and give them encouragement. You as an artist will probably find this young person in your neighborhood that you can mentor so that they can later on be on the show to share their story about how Sherry helped them from where they were going. Because I hear people talk about the home training and that. Trust me, they are getting it, but everybody go out there. Even some adults go out there and looking to meet up with the Joneses.
Yeah, and but you know what, Daphne, one of the things that I really feel for the youth today, that because I've taken some of the youth from my church, they live in the inner city. I live in the suburbs, and it's probably across the board, across the nation, the same. Mm-hmm. Suburban life is a lot less threatening, I think, than inner city life. So I've had a friend, and so there's this place that I go at the end of the summer where they have what is like a corn fest. And so there's a group of kids from the city. They come out. These kids, I said, okay, well, now you can just go wherever you want to go. Mm-hmm. And when they get out there, it's like they're in packs. They're looking at people they don't know. It's like the fear that there is because when a lot of times when you live in the inner city, your guard has to be up, and you don't have the opportunity to just be free, just to go smell the roses, walk through the park without wondering whether or not somebody is going to do something, because there's this big hype that anywhere you go, anybody you see,
you can't trust.
Can harm you.
Yeah, a lot of them don't have the trust factor. And even when there are people who are looking to help them and they don't want to do that. And you know, this is not the purpose for the show this morning, because we can do another 10 episodes on this topic. So I want to shift gears out of that conversation. And I want to enter into why we are really here this morning.
Okay.
When, at what stage of your life did you realize that, oh my God, I got this melodious voice. I don't only want to sing to the people in my congregation, but I want the world to hear me. When did you get that revelation?
That just happened about a year ago, actually. I've been singing all my life. I've been singing since I was a little tot.
Why are you laughing?
I'm laughing because, you know, you think the revelation, people would think that that revelation would be with people very early on. People said things, you know, but I was taught to be very, very humble and very shy and sit at the back of the place and wait for somebody to call you up like that. Mm-hmm. And so with that kind of inner thinking, for years, I didn't do all that I could have done to promote myself.
Sherry,
Sherry,
I want to say something. You know, yesterday I had lunch with a friend of mine, and she said something similar to me. She said, Daphne, I grew up very quiet as a quiet child. I always sit around. I never got involved in the conversations that was going on, because I never wanted to be told that this is not a child's conversation, because she used to sit and heard that told to other people. So she was never told that, but she knew that she couldn't say something. And isn't that interesting? You grew up and things are humble. You didn't see that what you have is a skill that could help other people evolve.
Right. It just depends on the environment. That was part of the environment that I grew up in. Mm-hmm. But it was, I mean, it was like all of a sudden there was this really, I knew as a young woman that I wanted to sing, but it was like, okay, you know, I knew I sang, I knew I had a nice voice, but I didn't really pursue that.
Were you told that you're only supposed to sing in the church?
Basically, that was one of the things that was just understood, maybe not told, but it was understood because that the whole thing of singing in the church and singing for God was the ultimate thing to do. You need to use your talent for the Lord, not really for the world. So,
and isn't it a shame how our society views our skills and talents? Because if we don't use our talents outside there in the world, how are we going to be able to bring people into the church? People need to understand, I can sing, I can dance, I can act, and I can do that in a melodious, glorious way.
Absolutely.
But, you know, back in the day, and even now, some religious folks think that if you have a good voice, you should not be singing out in the world.
Absolutely.
And it is crazy.
It is crazy. Yes. I heard one minister who was, he just happened to be a music major, PhD, and he was, and he is a preacher. He's a pastor. Mm-hmm. And he said, you better use your talent. You better use your talent.
That's right.
That means that if you have talent, use it. Use it in the church, use it in the world, use it wherever it is. I couldn't understand it. I can't think of her name right now. But everybody knows her, Queen of Soul. She did the Respect.
Mm-hmm.
And her father, Aretha Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a perfect example. People use their talent as their livelihood.
Exactly.
And they also use it, that intimate, very personal praise and worship to God, their creator. And once you understand that you don't lessen your respect and your honor for God when you just go to work, you know, you just have your talent is also the resource. But once you begin to move into that area where now talent becomes your life source, God begins to bless that.
It's the obedience, Sherry, it's the obedience, and a lot of religious church folks are beating down people who have skills and talents, and they have to understand that those are our God-given talents, and
Absolutely.
He wants us to use it. It simply means some of us will probably start out on the street corners. I tell you something, Sherry. For the past 11 years, I have been going to Boston every July and every August with some French students. And I tell you something, when you go to Boston, there's a place that is called Quincy Market. You want to see skills and talents? Every hour, I think there are different performances taking place in that courtyard.
Wow.
People are making music from old basin. Oh, you know the tray that you put in the refrigerator at the bottom?
Yeah.
Plastic pail containers.
Yeah.
People are using pot covers. And that's good music.
Absolutely.
And the crowd gathers around them. I know a woman here in Connecticut, and she goes around and she teach in the inner city school music to children who are having emotional issues. When she was growing up, She was a military child.
Uh-huh.
Her brothers got a drum set, and her parents said she was a girl. She wouldn't play. She should not play drums. But
that's
she
horrible.
Said, she said, you know what? In my family, in every military family, she said, you buy a lot of ground beef. You buy large packet of sliced bologna.
Mm-hmm.
And she was naming all the stuff that her mom bought in packages in the meat department.
Yes.
Guess whose responsibility it was to pack away the meat? Hers. But you know what she did? She always used a spoon or her hand, and she would play drums on those packet of meats before she
awesome.
packed them away. And the mom okay. always say, Gina, don't you beat up the meat. And guess what? Sherry, she bought her first drum set, I think, when she was 40 years old.
Wow.
And now she says when her two kids want to play drums, she tell them play whatever they can find. The plate, the glass, whatever. And I'm sharing this to tell people out there. Don't allow your child to be a Sherry that wait until a year ago that she share the skill and
right.
the talent that God gave her. Encourage
yeah.
your kids, even when you don't understand what
yeah.
they are telling you. Tell them, baby, I don't really understand all you are telling me, but I know through God's help, you will understand. I'm here to support you.
Absolutely.
And I will get to understand it one day. Yes, it is good to sing in the church, but if you don't have a church to sing in, sing right at the entrance.
Sing on the street. Sing on the street. Sing at the gas station.
Sing
at the grocery store.
Sing on the train. Sing anywhere. Dance
That's right.
anywhere. Recite your poetry anywhere. Bake your
yes.
stuff and hand it out to people. Let them start sampling that you are a good baker. But don't
right.
sit down and blame the government, blame your parents, blame your siblings,
right.
that you cannot move ahead, because God gave all of us the skills and the talents that he created us to do. And it's a shame when we die and leave this world without our music being played. And when I say music, I'm
yeah.
not literally talking about music. It can be your good fried chicken. It can be your cake. It can be your pie. It can be your CD. It can be your DVD. Whatever.
Yeah.
It can be your T-shirt or your blouse that you are supposed to design. But
Absolutely.
Get up and do what it is. I want to thank the people who are in the chat room and to let them know if they have a question, they can either call in. It's 646-915-8166. Or if they just type their question in the chat room, I will read it for Sherry. So, Sherry, a year
yes.
ago, you were reborn. And you
Absolutely.
Realized, oh, boy, I got a CD somewhere in me.
Well, you know what's happened, Daphne. Let me tell you this before we go, because I see we don't have a lot of time. But I now have two CDs. I did a CD last year, and I just put that together this year. And then this year, in fact, yesterday, finished the editing.
Hold on, Sherry. Just answer what I ask you first before you go into that. I ask you when you realize that you had a CD in there, because you've been singing since you're a child, but
yeah.
you just got the revelation last year. When you got that revelation, who was the first person you spoke to about that revelation?
You know what? I don't know that I spoke to anybody. I think mm-hmm. that I actually began to seek out people that could help me to move.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing that I did, the major thing that I worked on, was the concert that I did in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I just began to do what I knew to do, because I've been singing in different groups. This is what happened. I've been singing with two choral groups. And so what I did was I watched how they began to sing, how they rehearsed, how they put on a program, how mm-hmm. that was done. And I just followed that example.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask.
Example.
Yes, so there was the example there based on your involvement in those two choral groups. But as you take a moment now to think back, normally when something as exciting as that happens in our lives and we realize, oh, I've been singing with these two choral groups from when I know I have a great voice. I am sure people have been telling you that. Why do you think, and you maybe don't have the answer to this, why do you think you did not literally run to somebody to say, oh my God, I get this revelation. I'm going to do a CD. I've been singing all my life. Now is the time. I'm so excited. I'm going to do the CD. Why you think that you didn't do that?
You know what? I think it was all of the things that we discussed earlier. But now that you've really brought it home, mm-hmm. I think what happened was I was singing for a community group.
Mm.
And this guy came up to me and he said, girl, I had no idea that was coming out of you.
Woo.
You need to be everywhere with me. This fellow was so excited, and I guess it made me feel so good. And then it was another guy, the fellow that I know that's in, who's a poet in Los Angeles. His name is Dwayne Archie. He does a fabulous job. And he said, okay, Sheree, I've been hearing about you. Sing something for me. So I sang, and he said, girl, I don't know. No, this is what he said to me. This is what did it. Now I'm recalling. He said, you know what? You've been singing all of this time, and when you were a little girl, they told you, no, you need to step back. But you're a grown woman. What have you done for yourself?
Oh, that's it. That's it right there. You see?
That was it.
Sheree, I know the Spirit did not have me asking you this question in different ways for no reason. The Spirit don't lie. The Spirit don't lie. And what you just said now, there's somebody out there in the world that needed to know that. I didn't know why the question had the Spirit had me stopping you and asking you. I knew was it. There is somebody out there that is being told exactly that right now. I need to know that they need to step out of that.
That's right. That's right.
Isn't
you're
that,
an adult. What do you? What have you done for yourself?
That's right.
You have to do it for yourself.
Exactly.
You know?
We got, there's a lot of naysayers, and this is why I'm so excited about this issue of the Success magazine, because I'm going to be spending the rest of the show talking about that. And I pray that some of the listeners and people in the chat room can hang around for that. This is what it's talking about, Sheree. There are so many naysayers out there. We have them in our family.
And the thing of it is, Daphne, is this. Let me tell you something. One of the things that I learned, I did some things in the past, facilitated healing racism classes. But in that, the impact is things that happen to you when you are a child and you are relatively powerless. You take that into that little person is still very much alive and very strong inside you.
Mm-hmm.
And until something, someone calls or says something or something occurs that allows you to understand, you are no longer the child of the world.
Mm-hmm.
You are an adult person, and
that's
you right. now have control over your life, your destiny, your career, your whatever. And once you realize that as an adult, you can quickly reevaluate that thing and begin to move forward. And that's exactly what happened to me.
And for some people, Sheree, I understand and affirm what you just said. But for some people, they really cannot do it quickly. But The one thing I want them to get out of what you say is to say it can be dealt with and allow them to move ahead. Some
Absolutely.
People will need mentors to get it done. Some will need coaches. Some will need confidant. Some will need friends. But
right.
for each of us, it's something different because some of us cannot do it alone. Others of us are very resilient, and we can get up and we can let it happen and we can shake off and say enough is enough. But if you're not like, if you're not a Sherry Victorian, if you're not a Daphne Clark Hudson, if you're not a Mary Jane Sue, if you're not a this, if you're not a that, find out what it takes for you to get the help to really blossom into what God created you to be.
Absolutely.
I want people to really know that you don't have to settle for
no,
the things
don't.
That have been said about you. No, you don't.
No, you don't.
And there are a lot of naysayers out there that is letting people sit down and we have a bag over their heads and everything like that. And you have to find the help to rise up from there.
Yeah.
Well,
and you and the other thing is you have it in you.
Mm-hmm.
It is there. It is inside you.
Mm-hmm.
And if I just believe that if it's destined for you to do a particular thing, you're going to do it. And something before you leave this space, something is going to be said or something is going to be done to stimulate you so that you go forth and do what it is you were designed to do.
And the thing is that it's the obedience, because you know something? Our entire lives, from the day we are entered into this world, we enter for a purpose and a reason. And some
Absolutely.
Of us take a long time to really embrace it. So it
like
is in the obedience. It's all right.
Yes.
The important
yes.
thing is that you
you
have now
done
it. You are not going back. It's
Absolutely.
Only forward. You can only look forward now on. And you got to do whatever it takes to move
Absolutely.
Forward. You
and it's
got
a glorious
to
thing. It's
first.
A glorious thing, Daphne. It's a glorious thing. It's a good
well,
feeling.
When we
you,
don't.
When you come into your own, and every person in the world, because I hear a lot of people say, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. But I tell you, everybody has something to do. There is a creator within every single solitary person.
You know
and
something, Terry?
And you're going to find out what it is.
You know something?
Yes.
I teach a small group at my church called In Pursuit of Purpose. And
Absolutely.
I'll never forget, we were sitting in one of the class and we are going through the discussion and everything. And all of a sudden, one of the lady in the class bang her hand on the desk because we were in a classroom.
Uh-huh.
And she said, I can't believe this. I can't believe this. And everybody looked because she was like sitting to the back of the room. The
yeah.
entire class looked around at her.
Yes. Yeah.
And she said, I can't believe it. And I said to her, what can't you believe? She said, my purpose and my calling. I know what it is.
Hallelujah.
I've been doing it all my life. It's right
Hallelujah.
Under my nose. I was thinking, she said, I was thinking because I didn't have a college degree and I didn't have this. I didn't go to college that this
mm-hmm.
couldn't be. But I know what it is. It was such a revelation and the tears
it
were rolling down her eyes. And I say that to say, too often our purpose and our calling is right under our noses, Sherry, and we are looking to say we cannot do that. Oh no, it is too simple. It has to be more sophisticated and
mm-hmm.
more complex. Each of us come here for a specific reason, and God equipped
Absolutely.
Us to do what it is we want to do. Well, would you like to sing one of your songs for us?
I can sing a little bit. I will sing something.
Okay.
It's just all a cappella. There's no music, but
okay. We understand that. But we pray somewhere down the road that we'll be able to hear your music here on the show. But we're not there.
I'll sing just a little segment of something. Something familiar is What a Friend We Have in Jesus. So I'll just do just a little bit of that. What a friend we have in Jesus. All our sin and grief to bear. What a privilege to carry.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Do you only sing God, spiritual music, or do you sing other songs?
Well, for the most part, I do, but other groups that I'm in, I sing a lot of other stuff. There's another song, I remember like in June, we did this, like these old standards, old standards, and there's this song,
It had to be you. It had to be you. I wandered around, finally found somebody who could make me be true. Could make me be true. Make me glad just to be sad, thinking of you. Some others have seen, might never be mean, might never be cross, or try to be boss. They wouldn't do.
Hear you with the music, Sherry. I want you, Sherry, looking back over what you've been told growing up, and you had this support and thing, and I'm sure you're saying, man, I'm having so much fun singing now. I wish I coulda. But that's neither here nor there now. What would you tell the young person, or even an adult person, who will be listening to this conversation between us today?
Yeah.
What would you say to them about stepping out and be bold in embracing your calling?
Oh, yeah. You know what? The key to that is this. Most people don't do it a lot of times because they feel that they're going to be rejected. But I want everybody to know, I don't care what it is that you're doing, there is a group waiting for you.
Amen.
There's a group of people that will follow
yes.
you, that will praise
yes.
you, that will appreciate
yes.
you.
Yes.
There's nothing that you can do
yes.
that you don't have a group or a following. But all you have to do is step out there and begin.
That's
and
right.
There will be somebody say, oh, you do that? Oh, you do that?
That's
oh,
right.
Wow.
That's right.
You know, somebody is going to find what you do fascinating
mm-hmm.
and glorious.
And
I
before.
Just say,
mm-hmm.
go out and do it.
And you first have to believe and support you. You have
yep.
to be your first patron.
Yeah,
you got to be
thing,
excited.
Yeah, but you have to, even if you're, you know what, sometimes people are fearful, Daphne. What I'm saying is, in that fear, just stick your toe out there. You know
feel
what I'm saying?
Feel the fear and do it anyhow.
That's right. Feel it and
that's what
and go.
I tell my clients, yeah, feel the fear but do it anyhow. Because right. before long, your shoulders will be standing so tall.
Right.
And you will be glad that you did.
That's so, absolutely, because the people behind you will begin to push you. They'll begin mm-hmm. to hold you up. They'll mm-hmm. begin to encourage you. But you have to give them the opportunity to do that.
Isn't that amazing, Sherry? You know,
you
all
have
the
to give them,
all the people yeah. who tell you you couldn't do something and that, and when they see you start being successful and everything, they
yeah.
start, oh, baby, I know you were good all along. I always
yeah.
know you were that. And that's all right. Sometimes you pinch yourself and say, am I hearing right here? But you got to know that regardless of what they say, you got to hold on. You have to have a firm grip onto what it is that you want. And know that even when Sherry's not there to applaud you and Daphne's not there to applaud you, the one constant support you have is God. Even
but God is not going to, let me tell you this, Daphne, God is in every person. And there's always going to be somebody there to witness and support you.
Mm-hmm. That's
you know,
right.
It's like there was like this one. Let me give you this story quickly. There was a man that I knew who started, and he said that every Wednesday night for the prayer service, you know, that's the least attended service anyway. And so he said that he was praying, and there was a woman that lived next door, and she could hear him praying in that church every Wednesday. And
mm-hmm.
so finally he thought, well, you know what? Nobody's coming. I think I'm just going to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And on the day that he decided to do that, unbeknownst to him,
the lady came.
Said, oh, we had good service tonight, didn't we, Pastor?
Mm-hmm.
But for weeks he had been going there alone. So
mm-hmm.
even if you don't see a person, there's
that's
always
right.
a witness.
That's right. You keep
know,
doing what you're doing.
You are, to know what you're doing.
That's
so
right.
Even if you
that's
don't
right.
see that person, there's somebody there. Always somebody there. It is just not God out in the sky somewhere that you can't see.
It is there. It is
it's,
there. You
there's
keep...
a real live breathing person. Even mm-hmm. if you don't see him, there's somebody there.
Right.
In support of you.
Mm-hmm. The story with the bamboo tree is the same thing. I mean, they planted bamboo tree and he never stopped watering for years. He didn't see nothing. And then one day he go by and there's a tall shoot of the bamboo. And it's the same thing in our lives. You have to be persistent and embrace
right.
the journey that you were called to travel. I want to ask the people in the chat room, do they have any questions? I have some guests in the chat room. Let me know if you have questions. In the meantime, Sherry, would you tell people the name of your CD?
Okay, the name of the CD is In His Bosom 2010.
In His Bosom 2010. And I hope
and
we can...
Yeah, they can go, since we're on the internet, they can go to myspace.com/VSHE. So they can go there and they can get the CDs, the DVD, of course, you know, some of the books are there as well. So it's available. If they can't remember all of that, then all they need to do is just Google Sherry Victorian, and I'll just pop up all over the place. Yeah.
Okay. All
yeah.
right. So we look forward to... the possibility of having you back on the show where we can see what's going on and probably see you at one of your concerts or something
oh,
in the there in the future. I want
thank
to encourage
you, so
you to you're very welcome. Continue doing God's work, continue writing songs and continue singing to impact and change lives, Sherry. I thank you for spending this time with us this morning.
Thank you so much, Daphne. It was a great joy for me.
Okay, thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay, that was Sherry Victorian out of the Chicago area. And Sherry has a new CD that is out In His Bosom. And she mentioned that you can get that on MySpace, and that. So check that out. So I thank you for that. For those of you that can hang around, I'm going to be spending the last segment. It was my plan to spend the third and fourth segment. Now we only have one segment because we had lost some time in the middle, but it was good conversation. So we are thankful. I have in my position of this morning my August issue of the success.com magazine, which is for a business magazine for business people. And I was amazed by that. The lineup of stories that's in here this morning. You have Magic Johnson, who has blessed the cover. We had Zig Ziglar. We have Jacqueline Smith's story in here. We have Craig Nelson. We have Brian Tracy, and the list goes on. But I want to spend time the rest of this time on someone who is affectionately known as the Bun Lady. And I have to go find her to get her on this show, because this is an amazing story. Her name is Coreda Harrington. And it says here, Coreda Harrington ignored the naysayers, took a risk, and built a new life for her children. And it said, people call Coreda Harrington the Bun Lady, and not just behind her back. She's quite fond of the nickname, even strapping on a plastic diarrhea sometimes during speaking engagements, mainly because buns have made her a millionaire. And I'm going to read some of the questions that she was asked here, because I know we all can learn from this. The first question, and this interview is by Jennifer Fraser. The first question here says, you have taken lots of risk. What advice would you give to other entrepreneurs who need motivation to take that extra risk step? And she answers, when I learned about the franchise opportunity with McDonald's and saw the lifestyle it offered, I was focused on buying my own restaurant. I applied, trained for 2 years, and in 1990 purchased a McDonald's in Effington. I needed to grow sales in this small town, so I purchased a Greyhound franchise and moved it to my restaurant parking lot. It worked. In the winter, we averaged 68 buses a day, and in the summer, over 100 buses a day. All stopped for food. There are going to be tons of naysayers who will tell us not to take risk. They'll tell us to keep the comfortable job where there is income and insurance. But if you believe in something, then you should go for it. The real key is that you have to have passion and enthusiasm for the product or project you are going to sell. There's plenty of money available. Money isn't as important as having the focus, the passion, and the real life that this is something good. Her second question, the second question that she was asked by Jennifer, how can someone achieve the type of success you have had? I believe that if you really believe in what you're doing and you believe it will benefit other people, then you'll be successful. Just be totally enthusiastic about it. Stay focused. Stay passionate. The other thing I think is really important is for you to really try and understand your customer. Pick a customer that you believe in. A lot of times when people are starting out, they know who their focus customer is. If they can understand what that customer needs are, then that will lead to success as well. Question number three. How have you earned such a strong clientele list? I will personally call and say, I'm the bun lady, and I want you to have an example of what we do. Then I'll overnight a box of my products. And once a month, I'll just tickle them, call them. Most of the time, when people make a change, it's because they are mad at something. You want to be at the top of the mind when they are ready to change. And persistence pays off. I am living an incredible life right now, and I wouldn't be living it if I had listened to first or second or third time they say no. Question number four. Did you ever feel like giving it up? Oh my gosh, yes. And I am sure I will feel that way again. You want to be easy, but it's never easy. You want it to be easy, but it's never easy. Your job title should not be CEO. It should be chief troubleshooting person on the planet. I can give you story after story after story where I thought, well, this is the end. And I am watching myself going down the tubes. Next question. What would you tell others who are about to give up? I firmly believe that we don't learn as much from our good experiences as we do from our challenges. So, when I look back at my life, I see the real rough times and how I had to do things differently and thought that came success. Look long term and embrace whatever challenges you are going through. In the end, you will learn more and be a better person from it. And I would say to anybody who has a business that they need to have some friend who is in the same level, so when they do feel like they are facing insurmountable problems, they have someone to talk to that will give them emotional support as well as some sage advice. Next question. What would you tell people who are fearful of starting a new business given the country's recent economic woes? I would tell them, if you look at history, there have been 17 recessions and 17 recoveries. We are on our way to recover right now from this recession. When I look back at my real estate business, my McDonald's franchise, my Greyhound bus franchise, my bakery, I started all those during an economic dip. So I believe that a recession is the right time to start a business because there are needs. There aren't so many cushy jobs. There are a lot of customers out there who are in chaos and are willing to change their buying patterns because of what they have just gone through. So it's a wonderful time to offer new service or product. The next question. What's the smartest move you have made with your money? When I started a real estate company with my life savings, $587, I leased my desk for $3 a month and my chair for $1.50 a month. And that was the start of everything. My real estate company was what gave me the chance to even be considered for a McDonald's. Next question. What influences or character traits enable you to dream and think so big? My dream was to give my sons a good life. I was passionate, persistent, and had enthusiasm. And being resourceful always helps. From a business perspective, my McDonald's training with stress quality, service, cleanliness, and value taught me to have the highest quality standard, to take great care of the customer, and focus on continuous improvement. That's been a key to my success. What does the future hold? Essentially, I hope to be known as the bun lady around the world. If you need bun, call me. What an amazing interview, and what encouragement for us as entrepreneurs to be reading and being part of, to know that the struggles that we are faced with, we are not the only ones. There are people in front of us who have gone through it, who are smelling the roses now just because they stuck it out. I was also amazed by Magic Johnson's interview. And, you know, Magic mentioned there that he went into... let me just read this first part for you, because I tell you something. This is such a powerful, powerful story. It says, Magic Touch, the secret behind a successful sports to business transition. Magic Johnson was in the seventh year of his Hall of Fame career when thoughts of his baseball afterlife led him to the office of Uber executive Michael Ovitz, co-founder of Creative Artist Agency, Hollywood's most powerful agency. Johnson had watched many former athletes attempt entry into the world of business only to fail. And he was hoping for advice that would allow him to chart a different course. This was an interview done by Don Yeager. Michael dropped the newspaper in front of me, Johnson tells Success. He asked, when the paper arrived, what do you read first? I told him I opened the sports section. He looked at me and said, wrong answer. From here on, if you want to be involved in business, you have to read business. I walked in his office, 6'9" and proud. I felt 5 foot tall and stunned when I left. And thus began the business career of a man who just 22 years later, in 2009, has hailed by Ebony Magazine as one of the most influential black business leaders in America. Built over 23 years, Beverly Hills, California-based Magic Johnson Enterprises now owns or operates gyms, Starbucks franchises, Burger Kings, movie theaters, and other businesses in 85 cities across 21 states. I learned a couple of great lessons here with Michael Overtez, Johnson says. The first is that if you want to be successful, you have to be willing to use every connection you've got. It is a funny story how that meeting came about. During a Lakers game the season before, I was standing on the sidelines getting ready to pass the ball inbounds. There were two businessmen I respect, studio executive Peter Gerber and recording industry executive Joe Smith, who were sitting there courtside and were huge fans. I looked over and asked, how do I get into business? It probably wasn't the best place to ask, but they could tell I was honestly looking for help. So later they arranged for me to meet Michael Overtez. Be ready to listen is the next thing that magic tells us. The second thing I learned is that if you want someone to be your mentor, you better be ready to listen and be humble, Johnson says. Michael wasn't really sure about working with me because so many athletes think they can move into business and never take anyone's advice. I had to prove to him I was serious and that I would listen. That meant changing his reading habits, Johnson says, and be immediately started grabbing business magazines, newspapers, books to take with him on the road. But reading was just the beginning of magic business education. His big lesson was listening. Johnson says his first foray into the world of business taught him what happens to entrepreneurs who aren't listening to their customers. In 1999, he decided to begin a chain of retail sporting goods stores called Magic 32 that he intended to take nationwide. To get the business off the ground, he decided to attend a major sporting goods convention and negotiated for the products he'd sell at the stores. I didn't ask a single customer what they'd be interested in, Johnson says. I went there looking for products I'd be interested in buying. I had to learn that I was not my customer. Actually, I was taught that lesson by what happened after we opened. Among the line of products Magic Johnson chose to carry was a series of 1,500 leather jackets. They fit Magic's taste, but not the taste of his customers, as evidenced by the fact they were still hanging on the racks when the initial store closed just a year later. I'm sure I've made bigger business mistakes, Johnson says, breaking into this trademark grim, but I can't think of one. Early lessons. Johnson's earliest entrepreneurial influences came from his parents in his hometown of Lansing, Michigan. He grew up in a kind of black family that people today would today worry is disappearing. Even though there were nine of us, we had what we needed, two great parents, food on the table, and time for the whole family to be together. He writes in his 1993 memoir, My Life. Both parents work hard. His dad had the night shift at the GM factory, as well as a second job that included plumbing, gas, and running his own trash hauling business. And his mother in janitorial and cafeteria work. My parents believe in work, not only for themselves, but for their children. Two, Johnson writes. The kids had assigned chores around the house and had to earn their spending money. By the time I was 10, I had my own little neighborhood business. I rake leaves, clean yards, and shovel snow. With the money I earned, I would go to the movies and buy an occasional record. Johnson's dad, Irving Johnson Sr., provided other life lesson too. Through one-on-one basketball games, his father played tough and not always fair. But that was the point. Dad was teaching me that I couldn't always get the calls, that I had to play above the contact. Johnson writes, he taught me to win against the odds and never to quit. Johnson's baseball career included the national championship at Michigan State, five NBA championships with the Los Angeles Lakers, and a gold medal with the Dream Team at the Olympics 1992. He played alongside and against some of NBA's best players, including Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and John Stockton. His new teammates are business partners who include Sodexo, TGI Fridays, Aetna, AMC Theaters, 24-Hour Fitness, Starbucks. He has carved out a niche, becoming the go-to player for companies hoping to expand into the urban marketplace, using the power of his brand in that space to increase the incredibility of businesses desiring a part of the pie in what Johnson's call underserved and ethnically deprived urban communities. Something to prove. The Magic 32 retail store failed also taught Johnson another important lesson. Have a vision for your company or prepare for failure. A lot of athletes go out and want to start sports bars and restaurants, and they do it without vision of what they are going to add to their customers. Johnson says, I can say that because I did it, but now I know what my vision is. And everything we consider has to fit that vision. Lots of opportunities come our way. And we ask ourselves as we look at everyone whether it is being something of value to our communities we serve. And as we make our way around those communities, my team now is always asking, what's missing? We learn that African Americans are the number one group of movers in America, yet we haven't had theaters in our neighborhoods. That then we started building Magic Johnson Theaters. If your vision is strong enough, focus isn't as much of a challenge. Things may sense as they don't. Johnson's company's estimated net worth is in excess of $700 million, according to Forbes magazine, making him among the most successful former professional athletes to have transitioned into the world of business. It is interesting to me that so few athletes make a successful move into business, Johnson says. There are many things about being an athlete that should prepare you for this world. Discipline, practice, outworking your opponent, all of that is just as important to me today as it was in the NBA. I think the problem is that for some athletes, our ego has been fed our whole life, and we are not used to people treating us as peers. Michael Overtise treated me like a man who had something to prove. And by that stage of my career, not many people treated me like that. I think I handled it right, and it made a great difference. Seeking mentors. The truth, Magic says, is that many entrepreneurs are successful at something, and that gives them the confidence to strike out in new directions. Most like the athletes who have failed at business aren't ready, like instructions from others, that what to do next. Sports got me in the door. I know that, Johnson says. But that door wasn't stay open forever. You have to do something with that access. In this world, just like in sports, nothing is handed to you. I had to learn that. Lucky for me, I started learning from my mentors while I was playing so that I could get a jump on in life after basketball. Johnson says his passion to prepare for life as an entrepreneur changed even the way he traveled when the Lakers team was on the road. While in cities like Atlanta, he met with executives from Coke. I looked everywhere for mentors and used every opportunity to ask questions, he says. One thing I tell people who ask me for advice is that you don't have to be a star to find a mentor, but you do have to show enthusiasm. I say I always show enthusiasm. Johnson says there are many parts of life as an athlete that he can relate to his past basketball career. The most important link, he says, is the power of research. While playing, I always study my opponents. I studied their tendencies so that I could predict where they'd go when they come down the court, he says. That is just as true now. I want to know my customers, want to know their tendencies. I want to know their reports. I get out and I ask. Disapproving the naysayers. Compiling and sharing that information has contributed to Johnson's success. The greatest example might be his partnership with Starbucks, which had previously established partnership with other companies. While traveling, Johnson often noticed that Premier Coffee Company doesn't have stores in the communities where Magic Johnson Enterprises partners were growing. Visiting Starbucks stores near these communities, Johnson talked to customers and found that many were from other urban communities and had driven several miles to spend their money at Starbucks. Armed with that anecdotal information, as well as statistics about the demographics he believed he could open for Starbucks, Johnson requested to meet with Starbucks executive Howard Schultz. He showed Schultz that the minority population in America is growing in a rate seven times as fast as the majority population, and that African Americans now spend more than $1 trillion annually. Latino American, largest minority, at 15.1% of the population, have a spending power in excess of $980 billion. I asked him if he wanted to leave all that on the table, or if he wanted to reach those populations with a partner who understood them. Johnson recalls he went to his board and we joined forces. Now, Johnson's companies own 125 Starbucks franchises, and our new per capita spending at our stores is outstanding. We proved everyone who said that minorities couldn't spend $3 for a cup of coffee wrong. But his research didn't stop with opening the door. Once he opened, he started looking at ways to tweak the Starbucks model to meet our customers. We were going to bring them what they wanted, Johnson says. The result speaks for itself. What an amazing story for us. For us who are small business owners and we are looking to transition into entrepreneurship where we can be the true example of what entrepreneurship is. Magic Johnson has demonstrated this so eloquently for us. And so is the Bond Lady that has done this for us. I thank all of you who have joined the show this morning. And I pray that you had a great show. We had two phenomenal women who are doing great things. I want to remind you to join us at the Vision Weekend Conference. And I want to encourage you to mark the show favorite and keep us lifted up in your prayers that we will continue to do the right thing to impact the lives of other entrepreneurs. Our goal and our mission and our vision is to educate, empower, and to inspire entrepreneurs and small business people. And I pray that we all will find our true entrepreneurial niche so that we too can have our stories to share with other people. Remember, you were called for a destiny. Follow your destiny and do not allow anyone to derail your life.
What's the plight that you've called me to? The thing I'm set aside to do. I trust you, Lord, to see me through. Will you let me look in your heart? Purpose tonight. Hallelujah.
You will open that business and direct it, hallelujah, to my destiny. I know what I'm here for. Tell the Lord, thank you. Hallelujah. For every trial that came with the slave. Hallelujah. For every struggle that came with the slave. I'm mighty grateful. I said I'm mighty grateful. See the breaking of day. It's destiny. Then I know what I'm here for. Yeah. Oh, for showing me to the Lord tonight and directing me. Hallelujah. To my destiny. A strong God. You may not be able to touch it right now. Begin to thank Him. Begin to praise Him. Begin to thank Him. Begin to praise Him. Begin to thank Him. Begin to praise Him. Hallelujah. Can you see it? Can you feel it? Everybody, you're going into a new dimension tonight. You'll never ever see it again the same way. You'll never ever touch it again the same way. You've been called with a great call. It's a monumental call. You've been called to change nations and generations. Come on and praise your God.